Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Voices for Justice tonight, February 28th, 2010. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we explore the recent document dump in the Orlando case of Casey Anthony. Is this case fact or fiction? You be the judge, and let's have a voice for justice this evening. Our panel will be taking your call shortly. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. Again, the number is 347-838-8622. Please make sure that if you want to ask a question to our panel, you choose the host queue option. I believe it's number one. Tonight, we will be speaking with Mark Bellamy, a private investigator, with our friend James Copenhaver over at Copenhaver & Associates in Orlando. We also will be speaking with Steph Watts, former ABC reporter and now host of his own show, which he had Dave Holloway on this evening. He'll be joining us shortly. His show here on Blog Talk Radio is called What's Up With This, and he's also an investigative producer and reporter who has covered the Kaylee and Casey Anthony case since June 2008. Mr. News himself, our good friend Mark Williams, is back. He's with Halifax Area News Watch, and Mark is also a regular on the Nancy Grace Show on HLN. He has covered this case since the beginning. And then we also have a special guest this evening with us, and he'll be joining us shortly as well. Good evening, Mark. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you, Michelle. Good to hear your tones again, and welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for being with us, sir. I know that we have a couple others that will be joining us shortly, but just for the record, before we get started, as I do every time we explore this case. And for some of the new listeners on, I am the former spokesperson for George and Cindy Anthony. I worked with them since probably August of 2008 through February of 2009. And so as I do every time we explore this case, I always invite Jose Baez, Andrea Lyons, George and Cindy Anthony, and Brad Conway to join us on the show. We did hear from Liz Brown this time around, the new spokesperson for the Casey Anthony defense team, which they declined our invitation. So I'm just letting everyone know that. And also, Mark, give us a little bit of the lowdown on the recent document dump earlier this month. I know that this past week, I believe Mark Nijame, the attorney for Tim Miller and a former attorney for George and Cindy, filed a court document also on that. So what's going on out there?
Well, you know, Michelle, I've been covering this story since July 24th of 2008, almost 2 years now. It's taken 2 years of my life, literally. And I was working a full-time job, then I was doing the Grace thing. But in that period of time, Michelle, the prosecution has dumped 12,419 pages of evidence, or whatever you want to call it, information, out on the public. A lot of these, of course, through the Freedom of Information Act by the Orlando Sentinel, who's done a bang-up job, and, of course, Channel 9 and Kathy Bellich, the ABC affiliate here in Orlando. And their latest dump, of course, was the fact that the duct tape that was found around little Kaylee's mouth was the same duct tape, the same Henkel brand duct tape that was on the poster after little Kaylee went missing. It's also the duct tape that was on a gas can that was in the trunk of Casey Anthony's Pontiac Sunfire. This duct tape was, at the time, only manufactured for the Ohio market. And if you recall, the Anthonys in 89 came from Ohio, northern Ohio, to sunny Florida. Okay? And even Channel 9 has put their 2 cents in, and they've done a bang-up job of investigative reporting after looking at the logo on the tape on their tape, okay, in their videotape that they shot, presenting that to the office of the prosecutor. And I'm not saying it's a slam dunk deal, but the walls are closing in. When you have the same brand of duct tape on three different locations, and this duct tape, again, only sold in the Ohio market at that time. And the deal is, you don't use a roll of duct tape real quickly. It's been 20 years, 21 years since they've been down here. So that thing has probably traveled all the way around.
Well,
and,
before you go further, Steph, are you on the line with us? Steph, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry, I had mute on because I was in a noisy area. I apologize.
No worries.
I'm on location in San Diego, so I wanted to make sure I had my phone on mute.
You did a great job, by the way, with Dave Holloway on the Natalie case with Tim Miller this evening. Good job on that.
Thank you very much.
Regards to the duct tape, because both of you gentlemen, Mark and Steph, know this case very well. Even though that it's the duct tape that comes from Ohio, were they able, from what I understand from FBI, they were not able to match the tears on that same roll of duct tape. Is that correct?
Well, I think, you know, Michelle, what's frustrating for me about this case is, like, I want to wait for trial. I'm, you know, we don't have all the details. We think we know all the details of this case, but we don't. So, I can speculate, and I don't have enough information to accurately answer your question. I believe that they believe that they have what they believe is a duct tape match, and we're going to have to wait for trial to find out if it really is a duct tape match.
Mark?
Well, I agree with you, Steph. I mean, I'm waiting for this trial to begin as well. I mean, this thing has dragged out over the past almost 2 years. Usually after a year in a first-degree murder case, you're on trial, boom, 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 you're given a sentence, and you're either gone or you're released back into the public or you serve the time that you've already served. Now, what's interesting about this, and this goes back to Jose Baez and his defense team, they're so desperate. Jose Baez, late last year, the judge said, Baez telling the judge, Stan Strickland, that by February, I'll have the name of the killer, okay? First week of February comes along, he's nowhere to be found. No, we don't have a name of a killer, okay? They want to blame it on Kronk. They want to blame it on another person, and it's just not gelling. And Andrea Lyon, they say they have to continue everything, have a continuance in this case, because Andrea Lyon is not up to speed on this case. That's a bull, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. because she's had time to write a book, go on the morning shows on television, and she's not up to speed. She may have not lost a case, but she's pretty much incompetent. And so is Jose Baez, according to a recent poll here in Orlando.
Well, and I don't understand what happened to right to a speedy trial. I mean, this may not go to trial till May 2011. I mean,
and I'm hearing it might not go to trial at all, and that I don't get either.
They are trying to muddle whatever jury pool we have. They want to drag this out so much that the folks who could become jurors will not remember what happened in the opening days of this case.
That's a good segue, Mark, in regards to, because I know that I'm seeing a lot of new names in the chat room here. You know, even though I had been a part of this case, the bottom line, no matter how many people, and I always say this when we do this damn show, no matter how much Kool-Aid you think I'm drinking, the only Kool-Aid I'm drinking at this point is that I want to make sure justice prevails for Kaylee Marie. And if her mother did it, I'll switch the switch. If she didn't do it, then show us who did. But in this particular case, we're still at a crossroads because I do not see a smoking gun. And if I'm trying to talk to a juror, and or better yet, if the defense is talking to me, I want somebody to show me from the prosecution how Casey Anthony did this crime. So far, everything is circumstantial. And the recent thing that came out was Kathy Bellish. And we did email ABC over there in Orlando. We didn't get anybody to confirm to be on.
I don't know the story. What happened with Kathy?
Kathy had gone on, correct me if I'm wrong, I know that Ellis Jostad did this on Nancy Grace, that recently the prosecutors had told Judge Strickland that secret materials or certain materials and information had come into their possession recently from law enforcement. And then Jostad continued that prosecutors wanted to delay disclosure to the Anthony's defense team, and Strickland agreed that the information would be kept secret from the defense for 30 days. Now, we've asked a lot of attorneys to be on the show tonight, and it was short notice, and I understand we couldn't get anyone. But do either of you understand how in the world you can defend a client if you're not privy to the information?
That doesn't make sense to me. But I want to jump back to something else that was said earlier, is that I'm not just concerned about the jury pool being muddled. I'm also concerned about people lying to get onto this jury in this case because it's such a high-profile case. That's a huge concern for me. But back to your question, I mean, it sounds preposterous to me, but there's no way the defense could be being withheld information. They could, have it subpoenaed, go in front of the judge and demand to see the information. It just doesn't make sense to me, but nothing does in this case.
Mark, do you know anything about that recent action from Strickland this week?
No, I mean, I've heard about it. And, you know, obviously, since nobody else is privy to it, I wouldn't really be privy to it either. I'm not buddies with Stan. I don't know, and I agree with Steph. It's interesting why they won't turn over certain items to the defense, because I would think that this could lead, if he doesn't say what it is, it could lead to an appeal down the road.
Does this have anything to do with the Sunshine Law?
That I couldn't tell you, because if it were a Sunshine Law deal, I would think that Jose would go in there and file his request and get everything that he needs. The media is getting a lot of stuff. But, you know, there are certain things that Judge Strickland just wants to keep close to the vest.
Michelle, are you trying to say Kathy Bellish was privy to this information before the defense team, just so I'm clear?
I believe Kathy was on Nancy Grace this week. And according to Kathy, I believe I'm quoting something that she had stated on the show. One thing that I'm hearing is that why does this information have to be kept secret? From what I understand, investigators don't want any interference. If they start releasing information about what they may be talking or who they may be talking with, that might have some interference by the defense. And so I think they just want to settle this, figure it out, and then we'll hear about what it is all about. So I believe Kathy was just basically a guest on Nancy's show, and from what she's gathering and from what the producer of Nancy Grace had indicated, that Judge Strickland has given a 30-day order that anything from whatever the prosecutors have do not have to disclose it to Jose for 30 days.
That's bizarre to me. But
And my question is, I thought this was an airtight case. They got their woman. She's in prison. They're going to crucify her. And it's like, okay, so who could be bringing up new information to the police at this point?
No one. That's what's interesting. Again, I think what Mark said is, it's all smoke and mirrors in this case. I mean, in the sense of all these people that are trying to inject themselves into this case, like the facts are going to speak for themselves. Somebody murdered that little girl. The little girl's body was found. And hopefully through trial, we'll get to figure out who that was and put a rest to the nonsense in this case. I get frustrated with the ridiculousness of the goings-on in this case. Mark, I don't know if you agree or not.
I just think that this thing should have been tied up Steph, a long time ago. I mean, a year into it, I mean, we should have had a verdict by the end of 2009. We should have gone to trial, had a verdict, and gone about our way, whether, you know, win, lose, or draw in this case. Because it's 2 years, 3 years is just ridiculous, especially in the state of Florida.
Yeah, and you know, in if anyone's losing at this point, it's the taxpayers in that state that I was born and raised in. You know, this is costing millions of dollars by the time it's all said and done. And if they know they've got the right person, well, then let's get to the bottom of it. I believe that we might have Mark Bellamy on the line now. Mark, are you with us?
This is Roz, Michelle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello, Rozzy Franco.
Do you have another caller? I can hold.
No. Do you have a question for our panel tonight?
No, I just wanted to let you know, first of all, it's standard procedure for the state to receive any evidence or any discovery, and they have plenty of time to mull it over, and then they give it over to the defense. And what's happening in this case where the judge ruled and toward the prosecution, I mean, there is a smoking gun that's just come out, and what Kathy Bellage was talking about was a source that was close to her, a source where journalists can say, hey, I have sources. Well, the Inquirer just came out and said, a source has told us that we've learned through Casey that we know that Roy Kronk was actually led to the body. Now, that is a bombshell. If that comes out and confirmed, then we'll know.
A bombshell to people, possibly, but to many of us, we knew that somebody led him there. Speaking of
but Kronk, don't take for granted that most of your listeners and most of the people that are involved in this case may be jumping on this case in the very beginning, in the middle, toward the end. I mean, it's got legs. It's got its appeal. But the thing is, people are missing a lot of that evidence, or discovery, rather. Mark Williams talked about over 12,000 pages. I mean, you can just imagine someone that's not involved in this case doesn't have time to read every little nuance.
That is true. That is true. And you mentioned Kronk. Do any of you have any information on what exactly the defense got out of Kronk's ex-wife?
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Mark, Steph, anyone?
I know Roz has got great information on this case. Mark, you're probably more up on the Kronk stuff than I am.
Well, they, from what I understand, they interviewed Joyce Curley, Kronk's ex-wife, out of town. They did it in a not sure what the state is, but anyway, they deposed her on videotape. But this is a woman who is divorced from Roy Kronk, and I've said this a dozen times, that she would blame Roy Kronk on everything from the Kennedy assassination to 9/11. She has nothing, she has no good feelings whatsoever for her ex-husband, and she is going to try and make it as difficult as possible. If, I think you'll agree, Rozzy, that this woman has just... As just venom coming out.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think Mark is right.
She has cancer. Yeah.
You know, and she's looking for her 15 minutes as well.
She yeah. And they can't take much stock in what she says because she was not here. She hasn't been in Orlando. And she's looked away from Roy for a period of time.
Michelle, you know they're grasping at straws when it's being reported that the defense believes now because Roy Kronk at some point duct taped his ex-wife is now a suspect. Come on. When you look at the actual duct tape, which was what Mark was talking about earlier, and we believe we won't actually find out until trial, I believe we'll find out before that whether that thread was the same thread on the knife that was on that duct tape. But yeah, that duct tape was exclusively came from Ohio. So who cares if Roy Kronk got kinky one night and duct taped his wife? What she says at the end of the day is going to be absolutely immaterial.
I agree. And at the end of the day, we still have the fact that this child was supposedly wrapped a few times on her skull with duct tape. And other things have been found, and there wasn't one stitch of DNA from the accused. So my question to all of you, and I wish we had a forensic person on or possibly an attorney, but at this point, when the FBI leaves DNA behind just looking at stuff, how in the world did this person do a crime and not leave anything behind, especially on duct tape?
Okay, Michelle, can I jump in? I think,
please.
And I think, Mark, you'll agree with me on this. What you're going to have to prove is, and what I want to know is, what is the obscure connection between Roy Kronk and Casey Anthony? What is the connection in this case? If you're going to go in front of a jury with this, you have to be very – have a definitive connection. He either committed the crime because of this, or he was placed there to uncover the body because of this. If you can't prove that to a jury, you're going to get laughed out of court. You can have a preposterous theory, but you've got to have facts to back it up. And right now, there is no facts to show that, that Roy Kronk did not I'm a little bit suspicious of him. Don't get me wrong, guys. I'm not tooting the horn here. I just think you've got to make the connection. There's got to be some kind of backstory, and we don't know what that is. So until it comes
Steph, Roy Kronk went into that neighborhood in August, I think probably in late October, and then, of course, December, when he finally called the cops for the third time. This guy is just a basic blue-collar meter reader who no longer works for Orlando Utilities because of a disability. And he just – it was just happenstance. I don't think – and I can – I'll –
But with the same story, Mark?
But that's
with
my,
the
that's
same
my
story?
Point,
I mean, his
remember.
Story on August 11th, 12th, and 13th was – you know, that he hit a plastic bag and a skull rolled out. And then, again, the skull rolled out in December, which would imply that the skull he saw in August, somebody put back in a bag. And his story is always the same. It's almost like he was programmed.
The only time the skull rolled out of the plastic bag was in December. He called Orange County Sheriff's deputy several times, and they came out. If you recall, Deputy Richard Kane went down, allegedly took a look at whatever it was. He says, "Oh, it's nothing." And then Kane was subsequently fired from the sheriff's office for dereliction of duty.
Michelle,
and he had people that showed up that really didn't care.
Michelle, I'm going to jump off for 10 minutes because they've made an arrest in the case that I'm working on. And
okay.
I've got to get some stuff. I'm going to call you back in, okay? I've just
okay.
Got the, and just so you know, on your radio show, you're hearing it first in the Chelsea an arrest. All right?
Well, thanks so much,
right,
Steph. I hope they do make an arrest and say hi to Tim for us, too.
Roz is going to pinch hit for me. I love my Roz. She's going to take my seat, my son pinch hit for me while I jump up, but I'll be back on it.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Now, in the documents of the 12,000 documents that you've discussed, Mark, there is a deposition or a statement made by a blackjack dealer that had dealt to Lee Anthony and Casey Anthony and Kronk during a cruise in 2007. Has anybody explored that connection?
I don't think so. This is the first time I've heard about it. That's pretty interesting. But as far as I know, there's nobody has ever checked that out.
Rosie?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this one, Michelle. And here's my deal. I think there's just so many different twists and turns in this case. It's almost like one more twist. But wait a minute, there may be something there. Okay, we talked about this before. What exactly transpired, and was there video of those two on a cruise ship together? No, there was no video. But there was testimony from a dealer. I just feel like, you know, if there were video, it'd have more weight. If there's only testimony from a dealer, he could be looking for his few minutes in this case.
15 minutes of fame. We have somebody from Orlando. I think it might be Mark Bellamy. Mark, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Mark. How are you, sir?
Hey.
Mark Bellamy is with Copenhagen and Associates. He is a private investigator in the Orlando area that's also worked with Tim Miller and Texas Equisearch on the search. Searches, I should say, and I know that you've had some stuff, and we hope that our friend James gets better. I know he's under the weather. Tell us a little bit. I know you and I spoke for the first time earlier today, and I know that you have some thoughts. By all means, share them, and let us know about the search efforts that you were on for our friend Tim Miller over at Texas Equisearch.
Okay, yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, obviously, and I hadn't heard this story about the about Kronk either, so that was the first that I'd heard about that. So I just was curious to hear hear what y'all had to say about that. But yes, I did. I was on two of the searches for Tim. I actually was at all three. The last one I didn't search. I was there to provide food and water and everything for all the searchers that were there. But the one before that, in August, when he called it because of water, I was on that search, and I was searched in that area that where Kaylee was eventually found. And what I found in that area was we tried four or five different areas and ways to get into that area, and we couldn't because of water at that time. I'm very, very familiar with that area because I lived maybe three or four streets over from where Casey grew up. So, you know, we were real familiar. My wife was on that search with us. And at that time in August, yes, there was still very heavy water in that area.
Roz, do you know anything about how much water? I believe recently we heard a report that there were only 10 days through that entire time that that area was underwater. Is that correct, Mark? Rob,
well, I mean, that was under Tropical Storm Fay, and it was completely submerged. Whether it was 10 days, I almost want to say it was more than 10 days. I don't know. Mark's from the region as well.
Yeah, it was more than 10 days. Of course, I only searched that one weekend, you know, but
there was good month where that was underwater.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. I lived there, you know, through Charlie and Francis and all those other hurricanes and stuff that we had, and actually, you know, they didn't produce as much water as Faye did, but...
when did Faye blow through?
Latter part of August of 2008.
No, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, because...
Okay,
remember,
so basically, Cronxie's remains, the police do nothing, and then we're to believe that the water submerged it, so when the search team went out, they were not able to see anything because it was submerged, and then the body floated up in December?
Well, I don't know that when it was found there was it was submerged. I believe it was the remains. I'm not going to even say a body because at this point there was no body, okay?
Right.
Because obviously
right.
It was in the bag and it had degenerated over time. So
three bags.
I mean if there was right, well, three bags, but I mean if it was a body there would have been some kind of buoyancy, but there wasn't. I mean it was just complete remains. So I don't know. There was no water in that area when he found it at that last time.
And remember, entomologists at University of Florida said the body was placed there sometime during that 30 days when Kaylee went missing, and there were grub worms and vegetation growing up through the remains. So she had been there for possibly since late June, early July, because
I can
remember,
see that.
She went
yeah.
missing. Remember, she went missing like the 16th. Of June of 08, and she was reported missing on the 17th of July or the 16th of July.
Okay, so
absolutely.
So the entomologist.
So Kronk said that he only implied that there was one bag, but yet we're to believe that there were two plastic bags and a laundry bag that that grass grew up through the remains. Is that what the documents
yeah.
are showing these days?
Well, that's what entomologists said. I mean, they came out there and they poked around the scene, and that's what they found.
Michelle, I mean, you're quoting stuff from Krunk's, you know, from some of his transcripts. I mean, this guy is not the brightest guy in the world. I mean, he had a hunch, obviously, but you know, I mean, he. You know, as far as there being, I mean, as far as it being described with the other little you know, descriptions that you're giving there, I mean, if it, whether it was three bags or one bag, I mean, you know, the forensics are going to go through whether it was three bags or one bag. I mean, to him, it could have just been a skull falls out of a bag. Is it odd? Yes, but maybe that's just the way he perceived it.
And when
just a reminder to the listeners in our chat room, the number to call in for questions, we have Rosie Franco, Mark Bellamy, and also Mark Williams on the line that will take your calls. The number is 347-838-8622. We're speaking about the Casey Anthony case, drawn-out case, I should say. Fact or fiction, you be the judge. So with everything that we do know in 12,000 documents, Mark, what are you seeing from a reporter's standpoint that their smoking gun could be?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that haven't been released yet, and I think when we get to trial, we'll know more. But I think your smoking gun is the duct tape, number one. Number two, the bodily fluids they found in the back of the Sunbird's trunk. You have Cindy Anthony screaming at a dispatcher in Orange County saying, it smells like a dead body in the back of the damn car.
Yeah, that was bad.
They went to the, you know, when they went to pick it up at the recovery yard, you know, there were flies flying around, and it smelled like a dead body. I mean, I don't think all the FBI forensics have been released yet to really put that smoking gun out there. But for reporters, this is what we're seeing out of those 12,000 pages.
I think we have Steph Watts actually back.
Yes, I'm back.
Steph, you're with us? Okay. Go ahead, Mark Bellamy. You had a question?
Yeah. I was going to comment on what Mark Williams was saying. You know, yes, you have all those pieces of evidence there, and you have George, who's an ex-police officer who would know the smell and all the things that he had to say about it in the beginning. But when you put all those things together and all of the lies that Casey had told about, you know, and taking 30 days to tell somebody where her child was and everything else. And it just, to me, like Mark says, there's a lot more evidence probably going to come out. But those are a lot of things that, you know, just point a good finger.
Well,
I was curious,
you know,
if anybody had talked to – I know there was a worker of Roy Kronk's, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but his name was David Dean, and I think that he had been out there at one time with those guys. Has anybody ever found out what David Dean had to say about this? He's also another meter reader. Has anybody heard anything about him?
I can jump in on this one. Let me just go back to where you began, Mark and Mark. Yeah, all of those things,
Mark.
Of those things and all of that discovery and all of that evidence that was released, that's great for character assassination. It's absolutely beautiful. But the main point here is the guy that had all the information has gotten immunity. So he doesn't even have to talk. And we're talking about Lee Anthony. We're talking about Casey's brother. We're talking about George and Cindy's son. Now, it really doesn't matter if Casey lied and all of that. All the stuff that we're seeing in the media, most of it will not be admissible in court. They have a very long and arduous process in front of them to determine what is hearsay, a jury selection. I mean, you're talking tons and tons of work and a lot of motions that have to be filed. Now, as far as the smoking gun, I'll tell you, this will be the smoking gun. If there are prints at some point that do surface, that will be the smoking gun, or if the source that the Inquirer and Kathy Belich alluded to is actually real, and that source says they know exactly who led Roy Kronk to the body. What does that mean? Does that mean that Roy Kronk was simply just led to the body for some kind of reward, or was Roy Kronk told to go there to remove the body because he's possibly a suspect? All of that remains out there, but with what's given, there is no possible way we could possibly know if there's a smoking gun. Okay, on Dave, what was his name? David Dean?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Jimmy
so on. Right. I don't have anything on him. The only thing that we've learned in the Crum case, as far as I go, now, anybody, any other reporter that's been researching this, and trust me, we all have, I mean, they may have something new, which I'd love to learn about, but the only thing that I know is they haven't found that link between Crunk and Dean. The only thing that we've learned is that that Crunk's ex-girlfriend that worked in the jail was allegedly told by Casey where the body was, and then that's how Roy Crunk got the information, and then that's how Roy Crunk got there.
Yeah, but seriously, think of that allegation. This girl has admitted to check fraud. She has admitted to lying. She's admitted to being a bitch. She's admitted to doing everything else. She's never once admitted to harming her daughter. And when the death sentence has been on when the capital case has been on the table twice now, it was taken off once, she's never copped a plea. So do you really honestly think she's talking in prison?
Well, I don't think she's talking in prison, but I definitely believe that all of that means that she is under strict guidelines under her attorney, Jose Baez.
Which brings me to Steph. I have a question for you, Steph. I love your show. You were able to have Brad Conway. I believe you also had Linda Bodden on there at one point, too,
yeah.
Which was really great.
Yeah.
Brad Conway, you asked a question that I had posed in the chat room in regards to our dear friend Dominic Casey, and I find it odd that the Anthonys and the defense team constantly make it out to be that Dominic Casey is no longer in the picture, he's a fraud, he's never been a private eye until January of 08, blah, 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 and then Brad gave Dominic Casey a bunch of kudos on your show and said he's there when we need him. What do you make of that?
I don't know. This whole I get a headache from this case. I want to see justice for the Anthonys, and you know, I believe that Cindy and George have the God-given right in this country to hang on to every hope and hang on to the fact that they believe their daughter is innocent. Because there's been so much muddy, the waters have been so muddied in this case. So if, you know, and surrounding the Roy Crunk situation, there's so much odd stuff with that, with his behavior that, you know, they have the right to question everything until it's proven that their daughter is found guilty. So, you know, people attack Cindy and George for, you know, the defense of their daughter in this case, but I think that they have that right. So I don't know if I even answered your question, to be honest with you. But
I don't think you did, but you made some great points, Steph.
do any of you – we have a caller on the line. Let's go to a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our panel?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Who's calling?
This is David Koenig.
Hi, David.
Hey, David.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I would like to find out if anybody has explored the possibility that that Zenaida Gonzalez is the alias that Casey Anthony uses.
Harvey?
There was a Zenaida Gonzalez that was pulled over and given a ticket. I don't know if anybody is privy to this story.
Yeah, John Morgan is representing.
Yeah. But that's not the same one that gave the – that's not the one that was pulled over for a ticket.
There was a Zenaida Gonzalez that was pulled over and was given a ticket. And she supposedly showed up and made negotiations, gave a ticket. Later she paid the ticket, part of the ticket, the same day that Casey Anthony forged a check and cashed it. She cashed it about a half block from where you pay the ticket downtown here in Orlando. The concept is that she has used Zenaida Gonzalez as her alias since she was 18 years old, using that alias to get into bars, and she used that used her ID, which was expired, that kind of looked like her, to avoid getting her driver's license taken away when she was pulled over. Has anyone explored that possibility?
Well, that could explain how she could find a name like that out of the blue with 22 of them floating around Orlando.
Right. She's been using that name as her fake name to get into bars. And she's a party girl, and she's been getting into bars for a long time. And so I think if the law enforcement community, if the prosecution was able to show that she herself is Anaya Gonzalez, I think that would be the smoking gun that would could bring out her plea. She would plea then.
Oh, that's a good question, because I'm having a deja vu with Todd Black and Dominic Casey myself. But go ahead. Anybody? I knew you'd like that, Mark.
That's the first time I've heard that. I think she went to that apartment complex, was looking for an apartment, and she ended up by just taking Zenaida's name, because Zenaida had gone there originally to look for an apartment as there as well. And I think she just slipped it. It's nothing more than identity theft, open and shut case there.
Right. I think that is actually the coincidence. The real thing is that she has been using this name for quite a while. And that's why she has no problem saying, I left the baby with Zenaida. And that's why the Zenaida Gonzalez has always been it was with the Zenaida for years. For years.
What bothers me is when I talked to Cindy, my God, 2 years ago, if it's been that long, I was one of the first persons to talk to her, and I said, have you ever heard that name Zenaida? And she goes, no, I have no idea who that is. And you can see that online. I mean, come on. She doesn't know who her daughter is leaving her granddaughter with, this obsessive compulsive woman, God bless her, but still. Come on.
I agree. I think that at the very first of the situation that Cindy was speaking the truth, it smells like a damn dead body in the trunk. You know, and of course, then later it changed. And she, my daughter had to have help doing this. Oh, but later my daughter didn't have anything to do with it. And so, as time progresses, she changes her story, and we all know why, I think.
Why is that? Is the assumption then that all of a sudden, let's go back to the scenario if a blackjack dealer is telling the truth. Crunk and Lee Anthony seem to know each other somehow. Then all of a sudden, Crunk gets a phone call, go there, the body's there, because Casey tells Lee, and that's why he gets immunity.
I'm sorry, I was on Facebook. What did you say?
I'm saying, okay, assuming Blackjack Boy is telling the truth and that Crunk and Lee Anthony had some history together, because
I know where you're going.
Cindy Anthony about the cruise, Cindy told me it wasn't Casey, it was Lee's girlfriend Mallory was on the cruise. So
right.
The two of them say they're on a cruise, Crunk and Lee know each other, all of a sudden he tells Crunk where to go to find the body or the remains, because now Casey has told him, and that's why he has immunity.
Oh, wait a minute. Plausible, but when did they go on the cruise again, Michelle? I totally forgot.
July 2007.
Wait.
That was a year before anybody went missing, and I doubt if anybody knew anybody at the time. I think your dealer boy is, as they say in the South, pulling you, giving you a foolerin', and I think he's full of, doggy-do.
I'm just saying what I read. I mean, it's
that
in the document.
That was in 2007? That doesn't make sense at all.
Because
does it make sense that all of a sudden a PI out of the blue comes to help the Anthonys and says he's been a PI for 20
years? No, Dominic Casey's a fraud. We've known him in the Orlando area. My boyfriend is an architect, and he works with developers. He knows Dominic Casey, because Dominic Casey's wife was in the development industry. All I'm saying is that guy's been a fraud, and you can talk to any developer around here. He used to be in the real estate business. He only got his license around this time. He was called on by them through a channel that they all knew. That was his deal. He's not some like high-end private eye. Don't we have one on the line? Who's on the line? Mark
Bellamy.
Elton? Yes.
That's me. Yes.
Yeah, I am. I knew nothing of Dominic Casey myself either. So, I don't know what to say about him. I I've never heard his name or anything else. But who came forward with the Jack-like dealer?
I read that in documents that came out way in the beginning when the releases started happening. And it was followed up by a private investigator that knew of that witness. And one thing led to another. I've mentioned it to Jose Baez, and I found it very ironic that they would have run in. Now, remember, July of 07 also, Jose Ortiz, the alleged father at one point, dies in a car accident in Orlando in 07. His mother's name was Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez. So then all of a sudden, now they're on a cruise ship. Crunk and Lee are there, blah, blah, blah. And now all of a sudden, brother has immunity, and nobody speaks about Lee Anthony whatsoever. I find it all suspicious. But if this is the case that Crunk was led there, who led him? You know, what, the psychic that was on the phone with Dominic Casey? I mean, somebody had to have
led
him.
Wait a minute. Let's not discredit her. Let's not discredit her because there was a psychic on the phone with Dominic Casey, and I've talked to that psychic.
Oh, I'm not discrediting her. I know who she is. I'm not discrediting her at all. I'm saying when you've got a bunch of psychics and you've got a bunch of search teams and police and family members searching an area and had never come across anything, and Kathy Bellish is one of her producers, were once quoted as saying, "I walk that street every day with my dogs. They never smelt a thing." That you wonder, okay, what the hell is going on, and who put Kaylee there, and who led Crunk there to find Kaylee? And yet all the circumstantial evidence still, to me, and I'm not a private investigator, so Mark Bellamy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you have all of this evidence that, yes, it paints a picture of somebody that's done a crime, kind of like the Amanda Knox doing cartwheels, when the DNA and the evidence really doesn't draw the conclusion that, yes, this individual did this heinous crime, then what do you do?
Find the father.
Is that what
someone
said?
No, I said I'm the father. I'm coming clean.
Oh, whatever, Steph.
Idea.
Steph, I always knew you were the father. Damn it.
You're trying to date the father.
I'm Kaylee Anthony's father. I can't keep the secret anymore.
All right, Steph is back on. I got to go because I got to be up at 4 in the morning. Steph, you
thanks,
got me, right?
As always.
Bye,
all right.
Thank you for
all right, bye, guys.
But seriously, Mark Bellamy, when you're looking at circumstantial evidence, and that's what we're looking here, there's been a major character assassination on an individual. We all hate her. We all can't stand the looks of her. And, you know, at this point, we are all surmising she's done this heinous crime. How did she do it without leaving a damn thing behind to prove she did it?
Ooh,
well, we don't know she didn't leave anything behind because we don't know all the evidence. Okay.
Here's one other thing that you offered about evidence.
She left the body a block from the home.
That's
yeah,
that would
one.
Be
number
something.
Two,
and she covered it up for a month. How about that?
Say that again.
I said she covered up her disappearance for a month, and they found the body less than a block from the home.
Well, you've got
and
a very good
guys,
point
we,
there. How can you
we're,
keep
we're,
a granddaughter
yeah.
away from her grandparents for 30
right.
days and nobody know that something's up?
They were all very close, you know. They all spent a lot of time with her grandparents, and for her to keep her away from them and just not come forward about, I don't care how scared she was, if she did accidentally did something to Kaylee or whatever, then, you know, you still, you know, it just doesn't make sense that you wouldn't come forward and say, hey, something's happened to Kaylee, you know. As far as with the evidence you're talking about, you just keep digging. You just keep interviewing people, and you just keep going out there and hitting the streets and talking to people. And that's why I asked about David Dean, because I'd heard that David Dean was at that scene with Kronk one day during they had met there and were together, and that's why I was just wondering if anybody had heard if he had given any testimony or what he had to say.
No, but I want to say one thing. I'd like to say, this is Steph, that, you know, although there's been tons and tons of evidence released in this case, there's a lot of evidence that we still don't know that they're not going to release until trial. And one thing that people forget, the police told me at the very beginning of this case, early on, when I was behind closed doors with police with Mark Furman, they have extensive, and this is the police's word, extensive blood evidence in the trunk of that car. And that was what the police told me at the beginning of this case to my face, extensive blood evidence in the trunk of that car.
So when they issue a report from FBI or any of the agencies, when they issue a report, they can keep vital information out of the report so it's really not complete?
I don't know. I don't know if that's accurate. There may be other reports that haven't been released, possibly. I can't imagine that they would keep information out of a report, but I can't comment on that.
Somebody's asking in the chat room, can statements, and of course this might be a legal question, can statements that any of them have given in public in interviews be used to impeach the character of the witness if they testify, or because statements were made and not sworn, are they admissible? IOW, can statements on camera in public? Can it become admissible, and can it ruin the character of the witnesses if they testify for anything that they've given in public?
Can what become admissible? Can you just clear that up, simplify that?
I'm reading the question here from DSN TSLP. If you want to clarify your question or call in with your question. They're asking, can the statements that any of them have given in public or in interviews be used to ruin basically their witness testimonies?
Sure. You can remember in the Scott Peterson case out of California jurisdiction that two interviews came into the trial, Diane Sawyer's interview with Scott Peterson and Gloria Gomez's interview with Scott Peterson. The problem with this case is there's been so many interviews, it really compounds the problem. They're going to have to comb through all the transcripts, and I believe some of those media interviews will be admissible in court, particularly interviews from Cindy and George, any interviews that Lee did, and perhaps any interviews that Roy Kronk did. It's also going to be admissible. That's who was paid for what, who received money. That really discredits anybody who's giving interviews that's being paid.
I have another question, if I'm still on here.
Yes, David, go ahead.
I wonder, has anyone to compare this case to, let's say, the O.J. Simpson case, where he was declared not guilty if that happens, if something like that happens, I think the only thing that could happen would be like a civil case from the father of the child. And has there been anybody honestly looking for the father of the child so he could get a civil case against Casey Anthony to prevent her from making the millions of dollars and everybody else with the book rights and the movie rights from cashing in on Kaylee's death? I know that Casey has said that he's dead, but then she's lied about everything else. Have the police sought this guy, who it could be?
No.
I know it could be a married man at Universal Studios where she worked who probably wouldn't want to come forward and say anything about it.
Do you know something, David?
No, I don't. I could try to poke around and find out. I do work at Universal, but I wouldn't want to get fired for it.
Michelle, I can comment on that. I think that whoever the father of Kaylee Anthony is going to become part of this case. If he's deceased, I think that's going to come out at trial. I think whoever the father of Kaylee Anthony is relevant in this case, and I believe that he will come out of trial. I also believe that if she knew who he was and he was able to pay her money, Casey Anthony would have figured out somehow how to get money out of this guy because she did not have any money. So if his father was alive and able to pay her alimony or child support, she would have made sure that man was paying her child support. So I don't believe that he is able to come forward and pay child support.
And I just have one other legal question. If he is deceased, could his parents, the other grandparents of Kaylee Anthony, could they have a civil lawsuit against her, because that's the only reason OJ's in prison right now, is because he had no money and he did desperate things to try to stay alive and live in his the way he liked to live. Could the same pressure be applied to her if the worst thing in the world happens and she gets off? And could the grandparents do it?
Well, I think they could possibly file it like a cease and desist, or they could possibly file a motion to not profit from the murder of their daughter. But they'd have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they were the family that they were the grandparents of this missing child.
Right.
Do you think that George and Cindy Anthony, or for that matter, Lee Anthony, know who the father is?
Well, I think if they've gone off of what Casey told them, they may think they know, but Casey's not honest. She hasn't been honest about anything. So they may be reluctant to come forward with that information because they may know that she's not a credible source on anything. So it'll certainly be interesting to see what happens at trials. I'd like to see what Mark thinks about that.
Mark?
Which one? Let me put it to you this way. I understand that there was an agreement signed between the father and Casey that his name would never be revealed, and obviously that took place before this mystery person that supposedly died in a car accident. There's no paper trail of this individual, and if she was trying to squeeze him for child support, I don't think she never had any money. That's why she was stealing money from Amy Huizenga. That's why she got the checks from Amy's car when Amy let Casey take her car.
But don't you think it's kind of odd that you press charges against your friend who you've only known for a few months for 700 lousy bucks instead of asking the grandparents for 700 bucks and throwing it away, instead of pressing charges and then turning around and making thousands of dollars from the National Enquirer?
Are you talking about Amy?
Yeah.
No, Amy.
Don't you find that odd that
no,
why would you
that.
Be looking to get rich off of this case?
I don't believe that she took money from National Enquirer, because I spoke with Amy extensively and she would not do an interview on any of these on this issue at all. And I believe she was pressured and wanted to file charges against Casey Anthony, because remember, they may have only been able to get her on those charges, on those fraud charges. If they couldn't bring criminal charges against her, at least they could have gotten her on those fraud charges and kept her in jail and given her some jail time on those charges.
Do you believe that the police made her press charges?
Well, I don't think they made her. I think they certainly would have suggested to her the importance of her pressing charges in such a high-profile case. And, it's similar. I hate to compare it to the O.J. case, but, O.J. didn't get charged with double homicide. He got off in the double homicide, but they got him on this crappy burglary of the hotel. So sometimes you have to have other charges hanging in the background to be able to get somebody in jail on something when you know that they've committed a crime, but you're not able to charge them with it.
So why hasn't anyone like Leonard Padilla, who seems to always be coming up with money and saving the day of all of these teenagers, be able to save the day and get any of these people talking?
Well, what benefit would it be just for them to talk to Leonard Padilla? I don't even understand the question. Like
I'm saying, why do you believe that Casey Anthony thinks that Jose Baez and Andrea Lyons will get her off of a death sentence if she really did do the crime? Why wouldn't she be fessing up and taking her chances with Jose?
I think she's got a good defense team, first of all. I think she's got good attorneys, and I think she's muddied the waters on the truth of what happened, and she's, it's when people are on trial for their lives, it's a gamble. Messed up. I'm going to take my chances and go to trial. The interesting question will be whether or not she'll take the stand.
So who do you think, Steph or Mark? I know you've been with this case a long time. How do you think, before Jose got the A team together, do you think he could have accomplished getting her off?
I don't think so, because Jose has been practicing at the time for less than 5 years. He couldn't try a death penalty case. And I think she will eventually fess up. This is my inside telling me that I think she's going to eventually confess to something, and she will serve. She won't have to get the death penalty, but instead she will serve life in prison.
Should we take a bet on that?
I'll tell you why I think Jose Baez is a good attorney, because he's a good team. That's a sign of a good attorney, is to know your weaknesses. He knows he's not a strong death penalty attorney, and he got a good team together, and that indicates to me that he is a good attorney. He assemble a good, strong team. Know your weaknesses. He's smart.
I have a
question
about...
So how do you assemble a team without funding?
Well,
because
we all know the answer to that question. But.
The folks like Andrea Lyon, who has already written a book in this case, she can get her act together to write a book, but she can't get her act together to try the case. And this is the thing that really frosts my butt.
Yeah. Very interesting.
That can come back to bite her at trial if she's already written a book about a case she hasn't even tried.
Well,
Dr. G
wrote a book. Dr. G, which I've never seen her interview before except – you know, to make her announcements of dead bodies. But, boy, she doesn't do an interview too well. She was on Rachel Ray promoting her book, you know. But you've got an A-team of players.
She's not trying one of the biggest death penalty cases in the country.
No, but she supposedly filed the report of the remains of the individual that this woman is accused of murdering.
Right, but she was a TV personality prior to them bringing her on board on this case.
Oh,
so
good point.
I think she's less of a risk to them.
I have a question about Jose Baez. When Casey was out on bail, and she was spending the afternoons at his office, was it possible that she was working on her alibi on the computer, because there is a Zenaida Gonzalez MySpace page that only seemed to be accessed during those time periods?
Oh, that's interesting.
Who are you, David?
You've seen me.
I have, okay. I spent quite a long time in Orlando. I guess I might have seen you.
I'm not. I'm a singer-dancer at Universal Studios. I do the Blues Brothers show there.
Okay.
So you probably see me sometime, but
up some interesting questions.
I've taken an interest in this case, and what first got me involved was, you know, I had some dreams about the case. I know that sounds crazy, but union is some people's mind, but and then I actually phoned Jeanette Lucas and asked her about the dream that she had when she talked to Dominic Dixie. That got me fired up about the case.
I'm surprised she wasn't able to give you her visions of who really Dominic Casey was.
she doesn't know Dominic Casey. She had his phone number and was told
but
to call him.
But she's a psychic. That's what I'm saying. She's a psychic. You would think that she would have been able to call his number out.
Well, I don't think she's omnipotent or whatever that word is, but omniscient. I don't think she knows everything. But I think if you have a dream at night, you know, and it might disturb you, and you might come up with something.
Mark or Steph, do you guys have dreams on any of the cases you work?
They're like more like nightmares.
Yeah.
You know, and the deal is, sometimes I've had these powerful dreams recently, actually over the past year and a half since this case began. But it was like my ex-wife, who was a real nightmare to me. It's not exactly the Casey Anthony case.
Right. Hey, Mark Bellamy, some people are concerned that you haven't spoken enough on the show tonight. Do you have any last thoughts before we go this evening? And one other question, is Copenhaver Investigations investigating the Casey Anthony case?
No, we are not. Not at all. So, But no, I'm learning a lot by listening, and I know Mark Williams. I've seen him plenty of times on TV, and I like listening to what he has to say. But as just an outsider, you know, if I was an outsider and not an investigator or anything of that sort, you know, I mean, I'm feeling that a lot of the things that Mark says and the things I feel myself are what everybody else is seeing and what's the truth, you know. I know Casey from being my next door neighbor's boyfriend back in eighth grade, you know, and I know she lied back then, you know, about moving when she was going to break up with him, and she was moving to Ohio or somewhere, and then, you know, his mother runs into her at the Publix there.
Ohio,
at
there's
the duct tape.
There's your duct tape connection.
Wherever,
I
could
Ohio.
Be somewhere else.
Steph, what are you saying?
I said he just mentioned Ohio. There's your duct tape connection. See? It all came together at the end of the show. She wanted to go to Ohio.
You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the truth is, you know, she didn't move anywhere, you know. My friend ran into Cindy at the store and said, hey, what are you doing here? I thought y'all moved. Well, no, we didn't move. Well, that's just in eighth grade. Goes back to, you know, I know you said earlier that she's not the smartest or the sharpest tool in the shed, but I think she's a lot smarter than people think she is. You know, I think
so
that,
do I.
I,
well,
think,
I think being a habitual liar is her best defense. They can't believe
exactly.
anything she's ever said. So how do you know what's the truth and what isn't?
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
And when you ask
smart.
About Ohio, from what I understand also, you know, the Grunns are from Ohio. So, you know, there might – who knows? I'm just saying, I know that Richard Grunn and Cindy Anthony knew each other at one time, according to sources. So
yeah, when Jesse, his son Jesse was dating, that's how they got involved. They didn't know each other in Ohio if they came from Ohio.
Interesting. Any last thoughts, Mark Williams?
Boy, I wish waters wouldn't be muddled as much as they are. I mean, I've devoted almost 2 years of my life to this entire deal. I was, by the way, booked to be on Grace on Friday night, but they had to go with Kathy, which is fine with me. But anyway, let me just give my website a plug. It's HalifaxClarionNewsWatch.com, and I do local news, and I also do motorsports. I'm a gearhead sometimes.
And you do NASA, too.
NASA, and I, in the office window, I have my opinion on a lot of things. I'm going to try and freshen it up within the next 2 hours or so. And, you know, life goes on, and you know where to find me.
Mark Williams and Steph Watts and also Copenhaver and Associates are all also listed on blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. Steph, I want to give you the last word and also plug or talk anything about the case you're working on in San Diego and how our listeners can help you in that case, if any way.
Sure. I appreciate it. Also, not to be outdone by Mark, I'd like to plug my website, stephwattsreporter.com. My blog's on there. I'm in San Diego covering two cases, Chelsea King, a beautiful young girl who went missing from a park she jogs in. They just made an arrest of a 30-year-old man who lives right on the edge of the park. And I'm also covering the McStay case, a missing family of four, car found at the border. I'm going to be in San Diego covering these cases until we have some closure. And I appreciate you having me on the show, and thanks for inviting me.
No problem, Steph. And hopefully we'll catch you on your show in regards to those other cases. I know they're making headlines every day. So, everyone, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for coming to Voices for Justice. And, again, what are you doing to make a difference in the world? $1, 1 hour, one hug is all it takes. So be a voice for justice. And until we meet again next time, good night.
Good night.
See you later.
Husband gone 3 months to the day. Well, fella, now. the perfect wife. Why this even happened? Why? To be anyone we know.